All right, we are holding on Rav Amud Beis, 6 lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday a machloikus between a few Tanoim about the question, what happens if you lay in the Megillah, or did the other things that are supposed to be done during Adar Sheni, you did them at Adar Rishon. So our Mishnah had said that you have to do them again in Adar Sheni. We had Rav Eliezer, Rav Yossi saying, on the contrary, they apply in the first month, in the first Adar, and the implication is, and not in the second one. And in fact, now he doesn't say that explicitly. He just says, Mikra Megillah v'Hachilah Bereishin, but Rishonim explain, the Rashba, the Ritva explain that the wording that he uses implies that it has to be in the first, as we're going to see now in the Gemara, and not in the second. And then we had Rav Shimon Gamliel saying basically like the Tanakhama of the Braisa, that you would have to lay it over again, and we said there's machlokas between them as far as the Dalad Parashias, and the Halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that you would have to lay those over again also if you did them in Adra. So Amar Rav Yechanan, Shneim Mikra Echad Doshu, both Rav Shimon Gamliel and Rav Elezer Rav Yossi are both darshaning from the same pasuk to say whether the Kriyas and Megillah is an Adar Rishon or Adar Sheni. Rav Eliezer, Rav Yossi, the pasuk says b'chol shana v'shana. They have to keep Pesach every single year. So Rav Eliezer, Rav Yossi, Sava b'chol shana v'shana. It means you have to do like every other year, implying ma b'chol shana v'shana Adar hasamach l'shvat. Every other year, Adar is the month after Shvat. Afkan Adar hasamach l'shvat. The same way here, it has to be the Adar adjacent to Shvat. So therefore, in other words, Adar Adar. And that's the point, in other words, that it has to be in that one and not in Adar Sheni. Every other year, Adar is the month right before Nisan. Afkan, Adar HaSamach L'Nisan. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Bishleimer Rav Eliezer, now, so in other words, so what are we saying so far? You have B'chol Shana V'Shana, and each one of the Tanoim is saying that it means that we're comparing it to other years in a certain way. The question is, fine, in that case, obviously they're not only basing themselves on the Pasuk, there must be some other Svara involved for them to say that B'chol Shana V'Shana, in this case, means what they're saying. After all, it is equally well true that Adar in a regular year is after Shvat and before Nisan. So what's the underlying Svara? So the Gemara says, B'shlemer Rav Eliezer Rav Yossi, Mistaber Taima, we can understand the reasoning of Rav Eliezer Rav Yossi, because the Ein Ma'avir in Al HaMitzvah. We know we shouldn't delay the mitzvah. As soon as we have the opportunity to do the mitzvah, we should do it. So we should say, in other words, the first Adar that comes, when we could be doing the mitzvah, we should be doing it. And that would be why he's saying not only that B'di'evet you could do it in Adar Aleph, but even L'Hatchila, you should be doing it in that month, and you shouldn't be doing it in Adar Sheni. Elo Rav Shimon Gamliel my timer. Where is Rav Shimon Gamliel getting his svara that we have to compare to the fact that Adar is usually the month before Nisan? If that seems to go against Ein Ma'avir in Al HaMitzvahs. Now, Tosfos does point out that Ein Ma'avir in Al HaMitzvahs really only applies, you could say that Ein Ma'avir in Al HaMitzvahs means, in other words, when you have two possible mitzvahs to do, so first you should do the one that you get to first. Here, that wouldn't be shaykh. It's not like you have two mitzvahs, one to do in Adar Rishon and one to do in Adar Sheni. Nevertheless, though, we're still saying that that Ein Ma'avir in Al HaMitzvahs would include the idea that here you have a choice which Adar to do it in. And again, we're saying, given that the Pasuk itself is implying that you do it in one or the other, which one is it going to be? And the answer should be, based on Ein Ma'avir in Al HaMitzvahs, that it should be Adar Aleph. Ela Rav Shimon Gamliel my timer. So why does Rav Shimon Gamliel say otherwise? Amar Rav Tovi, timer Rav Shimon Gamliel, mismach ge'ula le'ge'ula od. Because Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that the fact that you're putting one ge'ula of Purim adjacent next to the other one of Pesach, Odif, that's the more important thing. And therefore, in other words, when the Pasuk says B'chol Shana V'Shana, it must be implying that you do it in such a way that that Purim should be like it was in that original year, namely where you have it close to Pesach. Therefore, in other words, given that, right, we do have to have some kind of svara in order to tell us how to learn B'chol Shana V'Shana, that svara of Mismach Mugaula Legaula Adif outweighs the svara of Ein Ma'avir in Al HaMitzvahs. In fact, there is some discussion among the poskim, do we say Ein Ma'avir in Al HaMitzvahs, where it would conflict with something with another thing, for example, Beroiv on Hadras Melech. We might say, for example, on the one hand, jump to do the mitzvah as soon as possible. On the other hand, if you delay it, you'll have a chance to do it with a greater hiddur, with more people or whatever, based on our Gemara as one of the sources to say that, in fact, that in that case, you should delay it, because that's what we're saying. That's what we're saying to do. Delay the reading of the Megillah for a whole month and the celebration of Purim for a whole month in order that it should be enhanced by being closer to Pesach. Rav Loza says, on the other hand, Taimed Rav Shimon Gamliel Mehacha, Rav Shimon Gamliel gets his Svara from here, another Pasuk in the Megillah, L'kayim Esigeres HaPurim HaZayis HaShenis. The Pasuk says that Mordechai is writing to them, Mordechai and Esther are writing to everybody to observe the second letter of Purim. So we're understanding the word HaShenis also means in the second month, meaning that if there are two Adars, then celebrate it in the second one. And the Gemara says, so according to that, then why do you need both psukim? The itzrich l'michtav ashenis, the itzrich l'michtav b'chol shana v'shana. According to that understanding, here's why you need both of them. The even b'chol shana v'shana, if you only had the word b'chol shana v'shana, hava minaki kushyan, then you would say, well, like we asked, we said that b'chol shana v'shana could equally well mean adar alak as adar sheni. Therefore, we need the pasuk hashenis to tell us it means dafka the second one. The iyashmin and hashenis, but if we only said the word hashenis, have amina batchila barishin of hasheni, maybe it would mean in a leap year you have to have Purim in both months. Maybe you have an adarishin and again in adarsheni. Kamashmalan b'chol shana v'shana. Therefore, it's saying like every other year, meaning a regular year, you only have Purim one day, not twice a month apart. The same way in a leap year, you're only going to have one. Which is that one going to be? Based on the word hashenis, it's going to be the second Adar. So that's that. So Purim takes place in a leap year in the second month, in the second Adar. So then, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yosi, hi, hashenis, my other blade. Well, what does Rabbi Eliezer ben Yosi do with that word hashenis? And the answer is, mi bari le l'chidir of Shmuel by Yehuda. He uses it for a different drasha, namely what Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda said, the Amr of Shmuel bar Yehuda, but chila kva'ua b'shushan. Originally, the Chachamim established the Yom Tov only in Shushan. All of a sudden, b'chol ha'olam kulay, later on, they established it throughout the rest of the world. Because we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, in Shushan, they realized to a certain extent what nest had been happened, had happened to them. People, especially the Rabban had said, people in walled cities in the rest of the empire didn't necessarily realize the magnitude of the nest. They saw that the king's soldiers were helping them against the Goyim. They didn't realize they had ever been in any danger, that there had ever been a Gzeira of Haman in the first place. Okay, they had heard rumors about it, but therefore Mordechai and Esther had to inform them of what actually happened over here so that they should know to observe it as well. So that's Hashenis, in other words, that there was an addition in the second letter to the first one, namely it's not just for the people in the unwalled cities and in Shushan to celebrate, it's something for every Jew in the world to celebrate. The Rashash actually makes an interesting point over here, and another interesting idea that he says about who the Gzeira was meant to affect in the first place. He says, even though Achashverosh had a huge empire, he says, B'pashtus, Achashverosh didn't necessarily rule all of it directly. You often had, you had then as later, that you had emperors rule through local kings. You have a local king from the existing dynasty of that country that rules in the name of Ahasuerus as a vassal, as a puppet king. So then he wants to say that maybe Haman's Gzeira wasn't meant to apply to those countries in the first place, because why would they agree to go through with such a monstrous idea? So the vote would be, therefore, that when we say in Shushan, we don't just mean Shushan, we mean other places like that that were directly under Ahasuerus' rule and didn't have a local king under Ahasuerus. As opposed to in the rest of the world, we're in parts of the world where they had such local kings, not necessarily would the Gzeira have applied to them in the first place, and therefore, so they tackle weren't in danger from this necessarily, and therefore Mordechai and Esther have to write to them, especially, you should know you're included in the Sakana of the Chachamim to celebrate Purim as well. Okay. Continues the Gemara. New topic, really. Amr of Shmuel by Yehuda, Shocholam Esther l'Chachamim. Esther sent a message to the Chachamim, Kva'uni l'Doris. Set up my Yom Tov for all generations. In other words, like this, we just said that some people were observing Purim, some were not. You have to remember, you know, like you read in books on Jewish history and in family histories and whatever about, you know, different communities had their own individual Purims on days when Hashem saved them from some danger or other. So like this, if it weren't for this plea of Esther's, it would have remained like that with Purim as well. Some people celebrate it, some people don't. She's saying, please establish it as a Yom Tov for all time. Why is she particularly concerned about it? One thing is, there's an explanation, because she wanted everybody to know the fact that she was with Ahasuerush was not something that she signed up for. It wasn't something that she willingly went to, as we're going to learn later on in the Perek, that she was forced into it, and she wants everybody to know about that. Shoholah, so they sent back a message to her, what are you doing? Are you trying to arouse jealousy on us among the Goyim, that the Goyim are going to say we're happy to talk about their defeat? She sends back a message to them, don't you worry. The whole story is already written in the chronicles of Modei Paras, so therefore they can find out from there. They can consult those and see what happened to them and how we Jews defeated them. It's not going to be that by making Megillas Esther and Purim, it's going to arouse any more jealousy of theirs. And in fact, Maharsha says, you see this in the Psukim. You have at the very end of the Megillah, Batichtev Esther Basavichayel, etc. And a few Psukim later, it says, Divrei Shalom Ve'emes, which means that Pasuk is hinting to this, that she's telling them, don't worry, there's going to be Shalom with the Goyim, there's going to be Emes with the Goyim. Why? Because a couple of Psukim later, the very end of the Megillah, it says, Halohi Farashas Gulas Mordechai Ashevid Le'emelach, Halohim Ksuvim Al-Sefer Divrei Yom Le'machai Modei Ofaras, which is exactly what the Gemara is saying over here. So in other words, all that is part of Esther informing them. You should know it's already written in the chronicles of Modei Paras, and therefore we got nothing to worry about. So sure enough, they established the Yom Tov. Then, now, here's another thing. Rav v'Rav Chanina v'Rav Yochanan v'Rav Chaviva Masnu, these four Amoraim learned the following statement, and the Gemara interjects, v'Kolei Seder Moed, throughout Seder Moed, whenever you have these four Chachamim mentioned, Koki Haizuga, whenever you have these two pairs of Chachamim, Chilufi Rav Yochanan, Rav Yochanan, Ma'ayu Rav Yochanan, we have to exchange out, we have to swap out Rav Yochanan and put in, it was actually Rav Yochanan, is the third of the group. Anyway, they all said, Shochel and Esther Lachachamim, Ksavuni Ladoris. Esther also sent a message to the Chachamim, write down the story for all generations. In other words, write down Megillas Esther and make it part of Tanakh. Shocholah, so they sent her back a message. We can't do that. After all, you have a pasuk in Mishlei, Haloi Chasavti L'chos Sholishim. The pasuk says, have I not written down for you threefold? Which means, in other words, so Rashi says, what we mean is, there's three places in Tanakh so far where it talks about the mitzvah of wiping out Amalek. You have first in B'Shalach, when Amalek first attacked the Jewish people. The second time in Parshat Tisetze, in Parshat Zohar. The third time is in Nevi'im, in Sefer Shmuel, when it tells about how Shmuel told Shaul to wipe out Amalek, and he failed to do the job. So now, then the Pasuk is saying, Haloi Chasavti L'chos Sholishim, implies Shalishim, v'loy rivoyim. So it implies we're only allowed to write it down three times, not a fourth time. That's how Rashi explains it. The Ritva says, okay, but where do you have anything in that pasuk about it referring specifically to Mohammed Amalek? So he says rather that what they meant was like this. Shlomo HaMelech, as we're going to say soon, wrote a lot of chokhmah. He wrote the contents of three svarim, and he would have liked to add more. But then he was told, Beruah HaKodesh, that those three and no more. Haloi Chasavti L'chos Sholishim, even you, Shlomo HaMelech, only have the right to add three svarim to Tanakh. So therefore, so they're saying, in other words, they see that even Shlomo was not able to add on his own, only what he was told min HaShemayim that he could. So how could we add a book to Kisei HaKodesh on our own? Just because you're asking us to. And then the Pnei Yeshua says a further detail, and he says, Shalishim refers to the three parts of Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. They're saying to her, look, Torah is a category of its own. It was dictated by Hashem to Moshe. Nevi'im is a category of its own. It's things that were told to the Nevi'im to tell the people. Ksuvim is a category of its own. It's things that were written by Ruach HaKodesh. But if you want us to add Megillas Esther to Tanakh, if not necessarily in any of those categories, are we going to have to create a fourth category of Sforim and Tanakh? We can't have it, because Sabti B'chosh Alishim. It's meant to only be three categories. So therefore we can't add it. Ad shematzul and nifra kasa b'Torah, until the Chachamim eventually found a pasuk written in the Torah, which implies that they could add it. Namely, the pasuk says, Hashem tells Moshe to tell Yeshua, psoiv zois zikaron b'sefer, write this down as a memory, as a remembrance in the sefer. So therefore it means, psoiv zois, when it says, write this, means, Masha kasev kan uva mishnah Torah, what's written here in Bishalach, in connection with the war with Amalek, and in Kisete, Parsha Sachar, both of those count as one, and we're referring to it as Zois for one thing, because it says Vizois HaTorah. Zikorin Mashakasa B'Neviim, when it says Zikorin refers to what's written in Neviim, the story with the war of Amalek and Shaul's time. Bas Sefer, Mashakasa B'Megillah, and the word Bas Sefer can refer therefore to the Megillah. So that gives us room to say that there can be a Megillah's Esther, and it can be one of the Kisvei HaKodesh. So therefore, so now they say, okay, good, we have room to write it in. And the Gemara says, Ketanoim. This is actually Machlokes Tanoim, whether in fact they added Megillas Esther to Kisvei HaKodesh. When it says Ksoiv Zois Mashakosiv Kan, the first opinion, Rabbi Yeshua, we're going to say, is that when it says Ksoiv Zois, means only what it says here in Parashat Bishalach, Zikorin Mashakosiv Mishnah Torah, Basefer Mashakosiv Neviim, Divrei Rabbi Yeshua. So according to Rabbi Yeshua, there's no room for Megillas Esther in Kisvei HaKodesh. So in other words, Rashi says a little further down in the sugya, it means that Megillas Esther was not designed to be written down. It was meant to be read and learned bal peh, which we'll tell. So Tosfos asks about that. Okay, so one second. So Rabbi Yeshua, the Tana, he can argue with what we're saying in Mishnayos, what we're going to say in a second, that we have Amoroyim who seem to hold the same way as well. So when we get to them, we'll get to what Tosfos asks about this. So anyway, that's what Rabbi Yeshua is saying. There's no warrant in the Torah, therefore, for writing Megillas Esther. Therefore, it's like the rest of Torah Shebichtav. It was written down, in other words, only because of the emergency. Only because otherwise they'd forget it. Rabbi Lazar Amudoyi says no. Ksov Zois Mashakosav Kan Uva Mishnah Torah, because they all count as one, because the whole Torah was dictated by Hashem to Moshe. Zikaron Mashakosav Neviim, Basefer Mashakosav Megillah, and therefore there is room, according to that pasuk, for writing down the Megillah and making it one of the books of Tanakh. Okay. So now a related topic. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Esther Eina Matama Aseyadai. A Megillas Esther does not make a person's hands tameh by touching it. Now we know the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, Rashi refers to, the Chachamim made a gzera, one of the Yud Ches Dover, that Sifrei HaKodesh are metameh a person's hands, in the sense that they have to wash their hands before they eat Trumah or whatever. And the Gemara explains the reason was because they used to store Kisvei HaKodesh together with food of Trumah on the theory that both of them are Kodesh, but mice would come and eat the Trumah and they would damage the Sfarim. So the Chachamim made a gzera first that the Sfarim themselves are Matame Trumah, and later on they strengthen that with one of the gzera, so the Yud Ches Dover, by saying that even hands that touch the Sefer Torah make Trumah Tomei. So now Shmuel is saying that Esther is not in that category. It's like a book of Torah Shabbat Peh, and therefore it's not matame your hands when you touch it, and you can touch Truma afterwards. Rashi says over here, by the way, a line of Machlokes with Shammai B'Shilohi. Actually, it's not so simple what Rashi means by that. And Mephoshim explained that maybe Rashi is referring to one of the, we're going to go now discussing through a few different Sfarim of Tanakh, which ones are and aren't Matame. So that particular one is Machlokes with Shammai B'Shilohi. Not that in general there's Machlokes with Shammai B'Shilohi about hands that touched a Sefer being Matame Truma. Everybody ended up agreeing with that. Anyway. So does that mean, remember, the Savar Shmuel Esther, Lav Ruach HaKodesh Nemra? Does that mean that Shmuel holds that Esther, that Megillas Esther was not written with Ruach HaKodesh, and therefore it's like a book of Torah Shabbat there, or like any other book? Shmuel Esther Ruach HaKodesh Nemra. Shmuel says that it was, we're going to see soon, that it was written with Ruach HaKodesh. And the answer is, Shmuel would say, Nemra Likreis, V'lein Nemra Lichtoi. It was written, it was said that it can be read Baal Peh, but not that it can be written down. In other words, he holds, like Rabbi Yeshua, that there was no room to say that it should be included in Kisvei HaKodesh. And therefore, so according to him, it's like a book of Torah Shabbat Peh, like when a person takes private notes of things of Torah Shabbat Peh, you're allowed to do that, but you're not allowed to, it wasn't meant to be written down. Now, here's where, good morning, Yaakov. Now, here's where Tosfos asks, one second. It's one thing, Rabbi Yeshua. Fine, he can argue with Mishnayos. But Shmuel is an Amora. He can't. We have clear Mishnayos in the next parak that say that if you read the Megillah Baal Peh, you're not Yotze. You have to have over there, it has to be written like a Sefer Torah, it has to be sown with Gideon, etc., etc. So therefore, so Tosfos says that maybe, okay, Shmuel would mean it wasn't meant to be written by Ruach HaKodesh, but Midrabbanan, the Chachamim said that you should write it. In other words, on a Doraisa level, it would have remained Torah Shaval Peh. The Chachamim later on said that you have to write that you have to write it down, but not that it became part of the Kisrei HaKodesh. Which Tosfos ends up saying, in that case, you have Megillas Tainis, which was also written under the direction of the Chachamim. But fine, Megillas Tainis, there's no particular rules how it has to be written. Megillas Esther, after all, you have the rules. It has to be written on Klaf, and sown with Gideon, and so on and so forth. So therefore, that was all part of the Takana of the Chachamim, but not that it was meant to be included in Kisrei HaKodesh. So the Gemara says, Maisi, I have a contradiction on Shmuel then. We have a Mishnah in Yadayim that discusses this whole point of which Sfarim are and aren't Matami a person's hands. Reb Meir Omer Kehelas Ena Matami as Yadayim. Reb Meir says that Sefer Kehelas is not Matami a person's hands because, in other words, it doesn't have the full Kedusha of the other Sfarim. Umachloikas B'Shir Hashirim. And he says there's Machloikas B'Shamei B'Shilol as far as Shir Hashirim, whether it's Matami the hands. Rabbi Yossi says the other way around. Shir Hashirim Matami as Yadayim Machloikas B'Kehelas. It's the other way around. Shir Hashirim is definitely Matami a person's hands. Definitely has Kedusha like Torah and Nevi'im. But, and like most of Ksuvim, it's a machlokas as far as Kehelas. Rav Shimon says, I agree that there's a machlokas on Kehelas, and you should know, Kehelas mikulah b'shamay or mechumah b'shilol. That's one of the ones where b'shamay is makel unusually, and b'shilol is machmir. Namely, in other words, so b'shamay is going to say, it's not machamay your hands, and b'shilol say it will. Avo, rus v'shir ashirim v'ester, machamay es eidayim. But Rav Shimon says, the other three megillas are machamay es eidayim. Now, even the other Tanoim, Rav Meir and Rav Yossi, are not addressing Megillas Esther, the Pashtus meaning, therefore, that they hold that Megillas Esther is Metamei Seidayim. So who is Shmuel, being an Amori, he can't argue on Tanoim, who is he basing himself on to say that it was not meant to be written, and therefore that it's not Metamei Seidayim? The answer is, Hudama Rav Yeshua. The answer is, he said he holds like Rav Yeshua. We said before, Rav Yeshua learns the Pasuk Ksoiv Zoski Karin Masefer to leave out Megillas Esther, that he holds that Ksoiv, that Zois Zikorin Masefer referred to the three previous times that the war with Amalek is mentioned in the Torah. Therefore, according to him, there's no room for Megillas Esther among the Kisrei HaKodesh, and therefore Shmuel can well say, sure, it was written with Ruach HaKodesh, but not. But so what? I mean, we say in Hayom Yom, for example, that all the Mechabrim down to the Taz and the Shach wrote with Ruach HaKodesh, but that doesn't make it part of Kisrei HaKodesh. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rav Shimon ben Unasi Yomer, Kehelas Enim Tanas Enidayim, B'Pnei Shechach Moseh Shol Shloimei. Because, why is Kehelas not Matame Seidayim, he says, and he said Rav Meir held the same way, because it's only the Chochma of Shloimeh, meaning, in other words, it's not necessarily written with Ruach HaKodesh. Omruloi, so the other Chacham said to him, Chizub Ovad Omer, can't be, there has to be a difference between Kehelas and the other ones. After all, is that the only words of Chochma that he said? Balik Manem Vaidaba Shloshes Alokam Moshel, you have a Pasuk that says, that Shloimeh said 3,000 Mishalim, and we don't find that the rest of them were written down. So therefore, if Kehelas was written down, then it has to mean that that one is different. It was written with Ruach HaKodesh. And you have another pasuk that says, Al Tosp Al Devarav, don't add to his words. So the Gemara says, My Va'omer, what is the proof from the second, what's the proof from the second pasuk? So V'chitema, because if you only had the first pasuk, you would say, Meimer Tova Omer, sure, Shloimeh said a lot of things. He said a lot of Divrei Chochma, three things like we said, but it only means Di'iboy Ichtiv or Di'iboy Lo Ichtiv. He himself decided, he himself decided what to write and what not to write. So that wouldn't necessarily prove that Kehelas is anything special. It would show he decided out of all its Chochma to write down Sefer Kehelas. Doesn't mean therefore that that Kehelas has any more Kedusha than any other Sefer that he might have written. Therefore, Toshma, Al Tosf, Al Devarav, therefore, that we bring the second pasuk, don't add to his words. In other words, that Shloimeh is saying himself with Ruach HaKodesh, that Hashem is saying, don't add to Shlomo's words, showing therefore that these words of Kehelas were in fact said by Ruach HaKodesh. Otherwise, you would, otherwise, sure, a later generation could add to them. Mind you, by the way, the Gemara in Bava Basra says that actually Shlomo's three Sforim, it credits them to Chizkiah B'Sayatzes, to Chizkiah and his, and the group of Chachamim who learned with him. Because what they did, so Mephoshim explained over there, what they did is they took Shlomo's Sforim, Mishle, Kehelas, and Shirashim, and like re-edited them. In the case of Mishle, you actually have a pasuk over there that says Asher Hetiku Anshe Chizkiah Melech Yehuda, that Chizkiah Melech Yehuda and his people strengthened them or recopied them. So they may have been. I mean, Nebuah still existed at that time. Ruach HaKodesh still existed at that time. They had the authorization to add or edit those Sfarim a little bit, but basically they can't add to them, for example, the rest of the Mishalim of Shlomo without permission from the But therefore, so the Chacham said to Rav Shimon ben Manasseh, you see from those two psukim that Kehelas is something special, different than all of the other Chachma of Shlomo, and therefore we have to say that it was written with Ruach HaKodesh, and it is Matameh Seidan. Okay. So now, we said before that Shmuel holds Esther was written with Ruach HaKodesh, and necessarily we have to say it was written with Ruach HaKodesh in order to be included in Kisvei HaKodesh. And so far we said most of the Tanoim, except Rabbi Yeshua, hold that it does belong in Kisvei HaKodesh. So how do we know it was written with Ruach HaKodesh? So Tanya, especially before, you know, you think about it, all the other Sfarim of Tanakh, either they were written by the Nevi'im themselves, or again, the Torah dictated to Hashem, dictated to Moshe by Hashem. The Nevi'im are, the Sfarim of Nevi'im are each one written by one of the Nevi'im. Ksuvim were also written by the various Nevi'im, for example, Tilim by David HaMelech, and Iyov, the Gemara says, in Bava Basra was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, etc. But we don't find specifically that Esther and Mordechai were Nevi'im. So where do we see, therefore, that there was Ruach HaKodesh involved in the writing of the Megillah, such that it should belong in Kisvei HaKodesh? So, Rabbi Eliezer, Esther Baruch HaKodesh Nemra, Shenema, Vayomer Haman Belibay. You have when Haman comes to Achashverosh in Perek Vav, and Achashverosh asks him, Ma Nasa Lo Isha Shem Melech Chofetz Bikoroi, and Haman thinks in his heart, who would the king want to honor more than me? How would they know what Haman was thinking in his heart if they didn't have Baruch HaKodesh? Rabbi Akiva, Esther Baruch HaKodesh Nemra, Shenema, Vatihi Esther Nos Hischein Ve'ene Koreha. Earlier it says that Esther found favor and grace in the eyes of everybody who saw her. Again, that's something people are thinking. How would the author of the Megillah know that this is what happened unless he had Ruach HaKodesh? Rav Meir Omer Esther Baruch HaKodesh Nemar, Shenemar Vayivoda Adova LeMordechai. The Pasuk says, by Bigson and Teresh's plot, the matter was known to Mordechai. Now therefore, again, that means he must have had Ruach HaKodesh to know it. Now, that doesn't show, unlike the previous and the following proofs, this one doesn't show that the Megillah itself was written with Ruach HaKodesh, but it shows that Mordechai had access to Ruach HaKodesh. And once he does, then it shows that the Megillah itself could be written with Ruach HaKodesh. Actually, the Turei Eben asks on that, he says, what kind of proof is that? Okay, he had Ruach HaKodesh. How does that show that when he sat down to write the Megillah, he used Ruach HaKodesh? So there's an interesting answer that's given by Rabbi Yonis and Ibershit and by a couple of others that says, if Mordechai had not written the Megillah with Ruach HaKodesh, then why would he write such a pasuk in it where he's priding himself on, look, I had access to Ruach HaKodesh? The very fact that he wrote that pasuk in, that he's taking credit for himself on that, shows he must have written it in Ruach HaKodesh. He was told, Milamayla, to write it that way, whether he likes it or not. So therefore, that shows that it was written in Ruach HaKodesh. Rabbi Yosi ben Dumaskus Soma, Esther Baruch HaKodesh Nemra, Shenema, Uva Biza Loi Shocho Es Yodam. When they defeated their enemies, it says over and over in the Psukim, they didn't stretch out their hands to take any of the spoils. Now, how could they possibly know throughout a whole empire of Sheva Esther, Mamea, and Medina that nobody took from the spoils? Must be they had Ruach HaKodesh. Omar Shmuel, so now comes Shmuel the Amora, and he says, I havoi hosam, if I had been there when the Chachamim were discussing this point, Havamina, Milsada Difamikulu, I would have given an answer that's better than all of theirs. Shenema, namely, the Pasuk says, Kimu v'kiblu, they affirmed and they accepted the mitzvah support him, meaning Kimu l'mayla mashakiblu l'mata. They affirmed Milamila that this should be a yomtiv and that Esther should and that we have to read Megillas Esther every year and so forth. What they accepted, what the Jewish people accepted down here on earth. Now, how would you know what they accepted in Shemayim if you didn't have Ruach HaKodesh? Tosfos asks over here that actually that Now the Gemara is going to say that. Well, so let's go through the next piece of Gemara, and then we'll talk about what Tosfos says. Amar Rava l'cholu islahu pircha. All of the explanations that the various Tanoim said, all of them we can shlug up. Levar midah Shmuel the less like pircha, with the exception of Shmuel's explanation, that one we cannot shlug up. Namely, let's go through them. Dear Rabbi Eliezer says that we learn the Esther Baruch HaKadosh Nemra because it says that Haman thought in his heart, well, who would the king want to honor more than me? That didn't show he had Baruch HaKadosh. Svarahu. It means whoever wrote the Megillah, when Mordechai wrote the Megillah, he used plain Svarah. Deloy have an inish tachosh of a Malka Kavasei. After all, there's nobody as important as Haman in the kingdom at that point. So when he's saying that the king should honor this person so much that he should have him ride on his horse and wear his royal robes, and originally he even says he should wear his crown, etc. So I'm dying to the natural. Obviously, you have to understand that it's logical to understand that Haman was thinking that Ahasuerus plans to honor him himself, and therefore he said what he said. Doesn't necessarily show that they had Ruach HaKodesh to understand that point. Do Rabbi Akiva. What about Rabbi Akiva's explanation? That we learn it from the fact that it says that Esther was graceful in everybody's eyes, and you're saying that means that they had to know people's thoughts, which shows Ruach HaKodesh. Not necessarily. Jumak Rabbi Lazar. Maybe it means, like Rabbi Lazar says later in the Perek, we're going to go through the Psukim of the Megillah and Darsh in them, almost Pasuk by Pasuk. And it says over there, and he says, this pasuk teaches us that every person over there thought that Esther was a member of his people, and therefore he liked her a lot, because people tend to like people of their own nationality. In other words, everybody was saying, I think that she's a Persian, I think that she's a Median, I think that she's a whatever. So therefore, you don't have to go based on what people are thinking. You can go based on what people are saying. In fact, Maharsha Shaw points out what happened was over here. We know that Mordechai had told Esther not to tell what nation she's from. He figured that would accomplish it that way. Ahasuerus says, "What do I need to marry a girl from? What do I need a girl who I don't even know what nation she's from? Let me get rid of her." In fact, we're saying over here it kind of backfired. Everybody thought that if she doesn't say what nation she's from, she must really be from our nation. So therefore, okay. What about the Hordid of Meir? What about Reb Meir's proof that he says from the fact that Mordechai was able to know what Bigson and Teresh were plotting and showed the Ruach HaKodesh? Maybe not. Maybe we could say, like the Gemara says later on, that Bigson and Teresh were two people from Taushi, so they spoke their language, but Mordechai, being a member of the Sanhedrin, knew all the languages, so they figured they could speak openly and nobody would understand them, but Mordechai understood them. So no Ruach HaKodesh involved. And behold, Rabbi Yossi ben Dermaskis is proof from the fact that it says that nobody in the entire empire took any of the spoils, and how would they know? Duma Pristiki Shodr, maybe Mordechai and Esther sent out messengers to all over the kingdom to verify that nobody had taken any of the spoils. And the reason why would be, Rashi over here, and on the Psukim, says the reason is because Shalom Yoram HaMelech. They don't want to offend the king. The king is likely to think, what are you guys, you're only fighting in order to gain money. So therefore, they held back from taking the spoils in order not to cause problems like that. And they're fine. So Mordechai and Esther send out messengers to verify that people taka complied with that. So therefore, that doesn't show Ruach HaKodesh. The Shmuel vadeh leslei pircha. But when it comes to Shmuel's proof from Kiyum of a Kibbul, there's no pircha, because how else would you know that they accepted in Shemayim what the Jewish people accepted down here on earth if you didn't have Ruach HaKodesh? Now, here's where Tosfos asks, one second. Don't we use the same pasuk Kiyum of Kibbul to learn in Masechta Shabbos, the famous thing, that the Jewish people did not originally fully accept the Torah, or not they didn't fully accept the Torah, but when they accepted the Torah on Mount Sinai, there could be a built-in excuse, we were forced into it, Kofa Aleim, how could be this, and only in the time of Ahasuerus, after the story of Purim, did they really fully re-accept it, because that's Kiyum of Kibbul, so therefore we're using it for that, Virasha. So we could shlog him up on that basis. Okay, Tosfos says over here, that the thing is, okay, but over here, what we're saying is, the other ones, we can completely shlog up their svara. We can show, you're saying, based on this pasuk, there had to be Ruach HaKodesh, I can tell you an alternate way they knew the fact that they're saying. With Shmuel, we're not saying, fine, we're saying there could be a pircha for the fact that the pasuk is being used for a different drasha, but not a pircha of his svara, not a pircha of his logic. There's a few other places where Tosfos addresses this point and gives somewhat similar answers. In one of those places, actually, Tosfos says an interesting point. If it only meant the drasha about that they accepted in Shemayim what's done here on earth, then the pasuk would have repeated the same verb. It would have said kimu v'kimu or kiblu v'kiblu. The fact that it uses two different expressions allows us to doubt in both things, that it was accepted in Shemayim and that the Jewish people reaccepted the Torah that they had accepted 1,000 years earlier by Matan Torah. There's also an interesting verse brought from a couple of the Achronim that says there's a kriyuk siv over here. If you look in the Megillah, the word bekiblu over here is written without the last vav. So therefore, so in all Gemara versus the one in Shabbos, one is doubting in the kri, one is doubting in the ksiv. So from the kri, we can learn kimu bekibel, meaning that Hashem in Shemayim accepted what the Jewish people had decided down here on earth. And the Gemara and Shabbos were focusing on kimu bekiblu, the kri that was saying, therefore, that it means that was saying that the Jewish people reaccepted the Torah, which originally kiblu they had accepted 1,000 years earlier by Matan Torah. So therefore, we have both. So anyway, so we're saying we can't schlug up Shmuel. Amar Ravina, so Ravina says, Hainu da Amri Inchi. This is like the expression that people say, Tova chodo pilpalta charifta, one sharp pepper is much better, mi meloit sani kori, than a whole basketful of pumpkins. Meaning Shmuel, the Amurda, is like a tiny little peppercorn compared to the giant pumpkins of the Tanoim, but nevertheless, his svara, his proof that Esther or HaKadosh Nemra is better than all the other ones, because we said we could schlug up all the other ones, but not his. Now the Gemara brings two more Amoraim who found proofs that Esther was written with her own Kodesh. Rabbi Yosef Omer Mehocha, Rabbi Yosef says, here's another proof Esther was written with Ruach HaKodesh, because it says, these days of Purim will never pass from among the Jewish people. Now, how is he supposed to know that 2,000 odd years later, we're still going to be celebrating Purim? It has to be Ruach HaKodesh. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, rather, from the end of that pasuk, the memory of Purim will never disappear from their descendants. Meaning, Tosfos says Rav Nachman by Yitzchak does not consider Rav Yosef's proof to be so strong. Because okay, what it means is the Jews of that generation, the memory of the story of Purim will never go away from them. How does that show that doesn't mean anything about future generations? When it says Vizichram La Yosef Mizaram, that even in future generations it won't go away, that shows very clearly it had to have been written with Ruach HaKodesh. I mean, there's also, I think, Marsha says that a slightly different vert, when it says, it could be, okay, they promised that it'll never go away. But v'zichrom l'yosef mizanam is like the Ruach HaKodesh coming and answering, you know what, you're right. V'zichrom l'yosef mizanam, the memory of Purim will never cease from the Jewish people. That could only be Ruach HaKodesh answering them and confirming that that will be the case. We mentioned in the Mishnah, Matanis Lev Yoinim, that during Adar Sheni, at the time when you're celebrating Purim, you also have to do Matanis Lev Yoinim. So let's talk about that as well as about Shalach Manas. Tani Rabbi Yosef, when the Pasuk says, Umishloyach Mon Nois Ishlareu, when it says each person has to send Mon Nois, in the plural, one person to the other, implies Shtei Manas for Ishachad. You have to send at least two portions to one person to be Yotze the Mitzvah. The Bach has an interesting point on it. Why? Because we find that Ahasuerus gave the Jewish people two presents. He gave them Haman. He gave Mordechai Haman's ring, and then he gave him Haman's house. So Ahasuerus gave two presents. Therefore, we have to give two presents. Matanis le'avyonim means shtei matanis le'shnei bnei adam. Matan nois le'avyonim means there has to be at least two gifts to two poor people. So one gift to each of two poor people, in other words. There's two major reasons that are brought in the poskim for the idea behind Mishloach Manos, and there is a bit of a nafka minah between them. The Trumas Hadeshen brings a practical reason because you want to make sure the person has enough food for his Purim Soda. What if he ran out? So you're supposed to send him food, and that way you'll make sure he has enough. The Monos Halevi, which is a Pirush on Megillas Esther from Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, who wrote L'Chadoidi, gives a different reason. He says it's in order to encourage Avos Yisrael among Jews. Haman, after all, accused. Yeshne Amecha Mefuzer Mefoda. The Jewish people are scattered and broken up among all the nations. They don't have Achdus. So we do Shalach Manos, we do Mishloach Manos in order to demonstrate just the opposite. We have Achdus. And they talk about different Nafkaminis between these two reasons. For example, what happens if you send somebody shalach manos and he declines it? If you say it's in order to provide for his purim soda, fine, you can still be yotze. Then you're not yotze because the fact is it wasn't provided for his soda. On the other hand, if you say it's in order to increase avos yisrael, okay, the person is not declining because he's saying I hate you and I don't want to get shalach manos from you. He's saying I don't need. Go give your shalach manos to somebody else who needs it more than me. It still promotes avos yisrael. And there are various other nafkaminas that are brought up. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, Shodolei Lerabbi Oshia, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, who was the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, sent to Rabbi Oshia, Atma de Egla Tilsa, a thigh of a third calf, and here Rashi explains that it means a calf that was third born, which is the best quality. There are various other places in Shas where it uses this expression, and Rashi has different explanations that it means a calf that's one third of its growth. Or Tosfos in some places says it just means a very good quality calf. The word shalish means like the shalishim alkolay, means like leaders and officers, so it means really good quality. Whatever it was, he sent him a thigh of such a calf, the garba de chamra, and a barrel of wine. Shalach le, so Rabbi Oshia sent back a message to Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, ki yamta bonu rabbeinu, u'mashleach manas ishlun ehu, u'matanas le'evyonim. You have accomplished with us, or Rebbe, you've accomplished Mishloach Manas Ishler Eru, Matonas Lev Yonim. Now, Agoyis HaBach and Agoyis HaGra take out the words Matonas Lev Yonim, and Rashi doesn't have it either. So there are actually several different explanations and several different gersois of what's going on over here. The gersa that we have in front of us could be, so Mephoshim talk about that, it means that he's saying that, that because Reb Oshia is saying, because I'm poor, and you sent something which is more than enough for Mishloach Manas, therefore the extra of it can count for Matanas Lev Yonim. Now, whether that actually works up Yalacha is not so simple. Can you, in fact, send Shalach Manas to a poor person and be Yotze, not only Mishloach Manas, but also Matanas Lev Yonim, is actually a question in Halacha whether you can do that. But there are different other gersois and explanations. Rashi, again, does not have the gersa with the word or Matanas Lev Yonim, so therefore he's saying you were Yotze Mishloach Manas. So what does that mean in that case? What's the chiddush? The chiddush could be, for one thing, because one of the things he sent was a barrel of wine. Now, are you yotze shalach manas by sending a food and a drink? Maybe not necessarily. Therefore, but you see over here, he did. And he's yotze. Therefore, we can see that sending a drink is fine. So that would be according to that. There's also a vote, some Mephoshim say, after all, Rabbi Oshia is Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya's Rebbe. So therefore, can you send Shalach Manas to your Rebbe and be Yotze? Or Mashalach Manas Ish L'Re'ehu? Your Rebbe is not Re'ehu. And therefore we say, nevertheless, that still works and you're still Yotze. With that said though, on the other hand, then there's a different gersa that says that you accomplished. Rabbi Hananel has, the Ritva has, that he says you're being Makayim Matonis Lev Yoni, implying but not Shalach Manas. Now, why not? Again, one possibility would be because you can't be Yotze by sending a drink as part of it. You have to send two kinds of food after. So therefore, say you wouldn't have been Yotze. And the Ritva brings like this. What Rabbi Oshia is saying is, relative to somebody of your stature, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, it's not appropriate to send such a small gift of Mishloach Manas. The Mishloach Manas has to be something that fits with your level. So therefore, you need to send something larger. So that it actually brings a girsa, that actually brings a different girsa. Now, what happened was, then Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya sent him a whole calf, not just a thigh, and three barrels of wine, not just one, and then Rabbi Oshia said, okay, now you've been Mekayim Shalach Manas. There is, in fact, also in that connection, the Chaya Adam says, in the same vein, that maybe Shalach Manas has to be appropriate to the recipient as well. Meaning the Ritva is talking about it being appropriate to the giver. So let's say, for example, you're giving to somebody, you being an adult, you don't just give, let's say, a lollipop and a bottle and a juice box or something. Now, according to the Chaya Adam says, maybe the same thing would apply to the recipient. If you're sending to an adult, also, you can't be sending that in the Yotzer. So in fact, the Mishnah Berurah brings that in Dira Halacha and says maybe you should tackle be choshish for that, and make sure that your shalach manas is something appropriate to your standing in life and to the standing in life of the person you're sending to. Okay. The Gemara continues, another case. Rabba shodolei lemori bar mar biyada baya. Rabba sent with Abaya, this is one of the sources for the concept that we say that Shalach Manas should ideally be given through a Shliach, because again, the idea is, especially according to the idea that promotes Avas Yisrael, like this, it promotes more Avas Yisrael because you have a Shliach involved. So he sent with Abaya to Mori Barmar, Meloi Taska de Kashva, a sack full of dates, Umulei Kosa Kimcha Davishuna, and a cup full of flour from dried toasted grain. So Rashi explains, in other words, they would toast fresh grain in the oven, and then they would then after it was toasted and dried, they would grind it up. Such flour was naturally sweet, so they would eat it as a snack. So so Rabba sent those things with Abaya to Mori Barmar. Omale Abaya, so Abaya says jokingly, like what kind of a present is this for you, the Rosh Hashiva? Hashka Omar Mori. Now Mori, when I bring it to him, he's gonna say, like the expression goes, Ichakla Malka Lahavi. Even if a farmer becomes a king, Dikula Mitzavora Leinochis, he never takes the basket around off from around his neck. In other words, he was used to always when he was a villager, a farmer, carrying around a basket around his neck and pulling out food from it to feed his animal. So even now that he's a king, he still keeps his old habit. The same way, Abaya is saying, look at this, you're a melech, you're a Rosh Hashiva, and you're sending him these common kinds of foods that everybody has. Marsha says slightly differently. The vote is that, a Rosh Hashiva, like Rabba, should be expected maybe to be sending a fairly small package of these things. Al-Derech, like you have, for example, when Yaakov is telling his sons to bring a present to the Egyptian viceroy, who they don't yet know is Yosef, he tells them, bring ma'at sori or ma'at dvash. Like a simple person is going to say, okay, I could bring a whole truckload of stuff. When you're bringing to an important person, he's bringing a present to another important person, he knows it can be a small amount of something precious. So the same way, Abaya is saying, what do you see? You're sending a whole sack full of dates? Send a smaller amount of something more important. Well, okay, so he brought the Shalach Manas to Mori Barmar. Hoder Shodah Le'ihu. Then Mori Barmar reciprocated and sent back with Abaya, poor Rabba, Meloi Taska de Zangvila, a bag full of ginger, or Meloi Kosa de Papalta, and a cup full of peppers. Of the papalta aricha of long peppers. Now we don't mean peppers like the bell peppers that we buy in the store. Those are native to America, or hot peppers, or whatever. We mean peppercorns. But there's a type of peppercorn that you make black pepper or white pepper of. There's a kind that are longer and then better quality than the usual ones. So in other words, Marashah says he reused the same kalim that Rabba sent him the present in, sent him the shalach manas in. He used the same kalim back. Omer Abaya, so Abaya says also, look at this, Hashta Omer Mar, now my Rebbe, meaning Rabbi, is going to be able to say, Ano Shadri Lechuya, V'iu Shadri Lechurva. I sent him sweet things, and he reciprocated by sending me sharp and bitter things. Like, how is that appropriate? In fact, Marsha says it is kind of appropriate to the guy's name. His name was Mori Barmar, where Mori is related to the word Mar, which means bitter. So therefore, in keeping with his name, he's sending bitter things. Further about that story, Amar Abaya, so Abaya tells another detail of that story. Ki naskini de mar, when I left my Rebbe's house, when I left Rabbe's house with the Shalach Manas for Mori Bar Mar, have a Samana, I was already full, we had already eaten the Purim Soda. But ki matoi lahosam, when I came to Mori Bar Mar's house, krivuli shisin soy the shikin minik data, they offered me 60 plates full with 60 different kinds of cooked dishes. 60 in the Gemara, a lot of times the guzma doesn't literally mean 60, but in other words, a large number of plates with different kinds of food. The ochli bahu shisin pluri, I ate 60 slices of them. Ubi shula basrais or have a correlate slikator. The last thing they offered was called slikator, pot roast. But I was so hungry without even realizing, I was ready to eat not only the food, but even the plate. Now, Marsha says that might not be a total guzma in the sense that they have such things as edible plates. They have. They even now, nowadays also, you have, for example, where they make edible plates out of sugar or chocolate or whatever. So Marsha says the same thing. They may use sugar to actually make edible plates. So therefore, Abaya is saying, not only I was ready to eat the pot roast, but even the sugar, even the plate made out of sugar that it was made of. So Amar Abaya says, Hainu Damri Inchi. This is like the expression people say, "Kofin anya v'lo yada." The poor person is hungry and he doesn't even realize. I thought when I left Rabba's that I was full, and it turns out I came to Mori Bama and I didn't even realize how hungry I was, that I'm ready to eat all this food and even to eat the edible plate. Inami, or another thing we can learn from this, there's always room in the stomach for good food. In other words, even though I was already full, but because they're offering me such good food and sugar plates and all, therefore I'm ready to eat that as well. Okay. More on the topic of Shalach Manos. Abaya bar Oven, Rav Chanina bar Oven, Machlafi Soda Sayo Lahadadi. These two Amaroyim would exchange their meals with each other. Now, what does that mean? Rashi says, every year, they would switch off who's going to be the host and who's going to be the guest for the Purim Suda. Many of the other Rishonim don't agree with Rashi on that, because, first of all, what's the Chiddush? And second of all, how does that show? How would Enakayim Shalach Monos or Matonis Lev Yonim with that? So they give a different answer, and the Rambam brings this Bahalacha. It means if a person is too poor to be able to afford Shalach Manos, what he should do is he gives his Suda to the other person. The other person gives him his stuff that he prepared for the Purim Suda back. And that way, they're Yotze Shalach Manos. That way, because each one gave food to the other one. And especially that works according to the Trumas Hadeshin's reason, that the reason for Shalach Manos is to make sure the other guy has enough for his Purim Suda. So in that way, you're accomplishing that. Different Achronim talk about different possibilities, though. Maybe it also includes that one of them should be inviting the other one, and that way, maybe that way he's Yotza both Shalach Manos and Matanas Lev Yonim, because he's also inviting a poor person to his house and giving him a meal, etc. Omar Rava, so here now Rava says, probably one of the most famous statements in Shas, V'chayev inish l'basumi b'puria, a person has to get drunk on Purim, until he doesn't know the difference between Aruch Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Now, there are probably as many explanations of this as there are blocks in Shas. There's a huge number of explanations. So first of all, there is an opinion of Rabbeinu Ephraim, a Talmud of the Rif, that's brought by many of the Rishonim. He says that this is not actually valid lahalacha, because the Gemara is now going to tell, after that, the story of Rabba and Rav Zera, where we see that there was almost a tragedy as a result of drinking on Purim, and therefore Rabbeinu Ephraim says the Gemara brings that in order to show the halacha is not like Rabba. You don't have to get drunk on Purim. On the other hand, most of the poskim do bring the statement of Rabba's, and there's a huge number of ways of explaining it. It means, for example, the Rambam says it means that a person drinks a little more than usual, and takes a nap. And when you're sleeping, you don't know the difference between Aruch Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Tosfos of Yehuda mentions the line from the Yerushalmi, which we say in Shoshanat Yaakov, Arura Zeresh, Bruch Esther, Arurim Kol Roshoyim, Bruchim Kol Tzadikim. And so the Mephoshim will say that it means that you have to drink just enough, that you can't say Aruch Haman and Baruch Mordechai. That would take a huge amount of drunkenness, but that you can't say that whole paragraph without stumbling over the word. That's much less drinking. There's a famous explanation that Oru Haman and Baruch Mordechai are both the same gematria. So therefore, if you can't figure out the gematria, then you've had enough to drink.
What?
Both of them have a gematria of 502.
Mordechai and Haman?
No. Oru Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Both of them add up to 502. So if you're a little muddled by a little bit of drinking, that you can't be able to figure out that gematria, then it means you had enough. There's an explanation that says there used to be a piyut that alternate lines of it would end with Oru Haman and Baruch Mordechai, and therefore, if you can't remember all the words of the piyut, then it means that you've had enough to drink. There's explanations along the lines of that it means in the Inyan, in what happened in the Megillah, what's the greater more important thing, the fact that Haman was defeated or the fact that Mordechai was elevated, which one contributed more to the saving of the Jewish people? So like when you're at the point where you can't figure that out, then you've had enough. And in Chassidus, you have in Torah Ur, there's a couple of Maimonim beginning Chayiv Inish L'Vasum Puria. In one of them, the Altar Rebbe discusses the idea that Oru Haman represents Sur Meira, Baruch Mordechai represents Vasei Toriv. So the point is that you don't know the difference between them. In other words, you're higher than all of that. You've reached a level of getting closer to Alakus. Higher than that, then you've accomplished what the Gemara is saying over here. By the way, a couple of the Achronim, the Korban Nisanel and others, point out that after all, the usual word in the Gemara for drunk would be Ravya. But Rava doesn't use that word. He used Basumi, which means not to be intoxicated, like dead drunk, but rather it means to drink and be like in a happier mood than normal. but not the drink to excess. Although a lot of the Rishonim and the Achronim have a lot what to say over here about the danger of drunkenness, and the Gemara talks about it in Sanhedrin, so it's not a license to go drink and then get dead drunk on Purim. The Gemara tells, Rabbah and Rav Zeira ovdu sudas Purim b'habi hadavi. Rabbah and Rav Zeira 1 year made their Purim Suda together. Ivsum, they both drank. Come Rabbah shachte v'Rav Zeira. Rabbah got up and slaughtered Rav Zeira. Now, what does that mean? Again, let's finish the story, and then we'll talk about, again, there's a huge number of explanations, what happened over here. L'macha boi rachni v'achye. The next morning, Rabbah davened for Rachmanis from Hashem to be mechayim esim, and sure enough, he revived Rav Zeira. L'shona, the next year, omolei nesimai v'neved suda Purim b'hadi adari. Again, Rabbah wants to invite Rav Zeira for Purim suda. Omolei, Rav Zeira says, never mind. Loi b'chol yot shayta v'shayta misrach shenisa. A nest does not happen all the time. In other words, yes, a nest happened last year, and you were able to revive me, but I don't want to rely on that again this year. Now, what's going on over here? So you have a huge number of explanations. For example, Rabbeinu Avraham ben Arambam says that it means that in his drunkenness, he beat him, he wounded him. So we can call that, and maybe even he hit him on the neck. So therefore, when it says that shacht, it doesn't literally mean he killed him, but it means like he caused him to faint. He was very badly injured. So therefore, so now when he says that Achye, that he revived him, doesn't mean he brought him to Chiesa Mesim. It means that he healed him. As we find, sometimes the word chai can refer to healing a wound. Similarly, there are other mafoshim who talk in similar veins about it. That means the Meiri, for example, says that shachte is really sachte, like he pressed him, like maybe like he accidentally sat on him or something and injured him. The Marsha says maybe it means that he gave him too much wine to drink, so that more than he could take. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says maybe what it was is the Purim that Rabbah felt that the Purim Suda is getting a little too out of hand. So like he did like an illusion of a pretend magic trick as if he had killed somebody or as if he had done something or whatever, and that shocked Rav Zeira so much that like he fainted. The Rebbe talks about this there's a famous sikha in Chelek Lamed Aleph where the Rebbe addresses this and mentions these various explanations. And says, I mean, there are problems with them after all. I mean, how are we saying that Rabbah, the murderer, the great tzaddik, is doing anything to harm or to injure a fellow yid, Rav Zeira? And in that case, why is he offering to do the Purim Suda next year? Doesn't he realize what happened last year? So the Rebbe explains what it means is that Rabbah was revealing in his wine, in his cups, he was revealing levels of elikus to Rav Zeira that he wasn't capable of handling. Al-Derech, like we say, that by Nodav Naviyu, it says they drank wine when they went into Kodesh Kodashim. It doesn't mean regular physical wine. It means that they reached delirium of elikos that were too much for them to take, and their neshamas left their body. The same way Rabbah is revealing to Rav Zeira delirium that are not on his level to take. In fact, the word Rabbah means great. The word Zeira means Zeira, which means small. So literally, Rav Zeira is on a lower level than Rabbah, and therefore when Rabbah is trying to bring him up, the Shocha, the shachte, Meloshin, the shchita, where you bring the animal up to a higher level, he's trying to bring Rav Zeira up to that higher level, and Rav Zeira can't take it, and his neshama flew away. So the next morning, then, we're saying that Rabbah davened that Rav Zeira's neshama should be able to return to him, that those diluyim shouldn't be too much. The next year, then, Rabbah is saying to Rav Zeira, do you want to go on such a journey again, and try to receive these diluyim? After all, it's a year later, you're a year older and a year wiser, maybe now you're able to take them. And Rav Zeira says, maybe, but on the other hand, not necessarily am I on that level yet, and a nest doesn't happen all the time, and therefore I don't want to take the risk. The Gemara says, Omar Rava, Sudas Purim sh'ochla b'layla lo yotzi yidei chevasi. If you eat the Purim Suda on the night going into Purim, then you're not yotzi mishta. My time, you may mishta v'simcha ksiv, because the Pasuk says you have to have days of happiness and feasting, so not by night. And the Gemara tells in this connection, Rav Ashi have a Yosef Kamei to Rav Kahana. Rav Ashi was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav Kahana, or on the side of it here it brings that it should be Da'meimar, who was another one of Rav Ashi's Rebbeim. Noga, it got late, but also this was on Purim day, but they also Rabbanan, and the other Chachamim, the other Talmidim hadn't come to the Yeshiva. Omale, so Rav Ashi asks his Rebbe, Rav Kahana or Ameimar, my time of also Rabbanan, why have the other Chachamim not come? And he says, Duma Triti Vesudas Purim, maybe because they're busy having their Purim Suda, so they don't have time to come to the Yeshiva. Omalei, so Rav Ashi says, V'loi have a Efshel Mechla Be'urta, so why they couldn't have eaten it last night? Omer Leisir of Kahano or Meima says to him, Loi Shmiel, or it could be the other way around also. It could be Rav Ashi saying to his Rebbe, haven't you heard, Hoda Omer Rabba, Sudas Purim Sha'ocha Balaila La Yotze Yedechim Ose, that if you eat the Purim Suda by night, you're not Yotze. So they couldn't have eaten it last night necessarily. They have to be eating it by day, and that explains why they're in the Bismedish. Omer Leisir. So Rav Kahana or Amema says, Omar Rava Hochi, did Rava really say that? Omale Ein, and Rav Ashi says yes, so on the side of here, Loi Shmi Ali, I never heard of this. Tonimine Aboyin Zimnin, so now the Rebbe, Amema, or Rav Kahana, learned the statement from his Talmud, Rav Ashi, 40 times. He had it repeated over and over again, 40 times, the dummy like commander Manach the Kise, and now when that was over, after he had done the 40 times, he felt like it was in his pocket, like now he knows it for sure, and he's going to remember it. There's a vote that said that they say on it, actually. Now, what about Shona Pirkei Neapam? And you're supposed to review it at least 100 times. The vote is, the Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia that a person has his money in his pocket. He's constantly feeling for it and checking if it's still there. So when you say something is in your pocket, doesn't mean you're not going to review it anymore. Just the opposite. I mean, now you're going to keep on reviewing it for yourself over and over. But he learned it from Rav Ashi 40 times so that he should have it straight in his mind. And now he himself can continue reviewing it over and over until he's reviewed it at least 100 or 101 times and therefore remember it for all time. It's quiet over here. I mean, most people aren't here yet. I guess I'll try to go on with the next Mishnah if we can. Mishnah says, now this has nothing to do directly with Masech and Megillah. The previous Mishnah said, Ein Bein, there's no difference between other Rishon and other Sheni, except for Kriyas and Megillah, Matanas Bavyonim, so the rest of the Mishnayas and this Perek are all going to be of the same pattern, Ein Bein, this and that, except such and such a din. You have to remember, Mishnayas were originally by heart, so when possible, there would do such things that would help people remember them. So Ein Bein, so there's no difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos except for Melechas Eichel Nefesh, which you're allowed to do on Yom Tov and you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, ha, now the implication of the Mishnah, in Machshire Eichel Nefesh, Zeh V'Zeh Shavim. The implication seems to be that as far as preparing things for Eichel Nefesh, for example, let's say sharpening a knife on Yom Tov in order to be able to chef, it sounds like Zeh V'Zeh Shavim. It sounds like Shabbos, and the Mishnah is implying, Shabbos and Yom Tov are both on the same level and you can't do it on Yom Tov either. Therefore, must nissin the loy Rabbi Yehuda. That would mean that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, Ein ben Yom Tov Shabbos ela Oichol Nefesh. The only difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov is Oichol Nefesh. Rabbi Yehuda matir af machshira Oichol Nefesh. And Rabbi Yehuda says even machshira Oichol Nefesh like that, for example, sharpening a knife in order to be able to shech, is allowed on Yom Tov. So our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Yehuda. You actually have a Gemara in Beitza that points out that our Mishnah really is going according to Beit Shammai, because you have a case that it mentions in Mishnayis in Beitza over there where you have fruit drying on your roof and you see it's about to rain and you're going to throw the fruit down through the skylight and the roof and you're allowed to do that on Yom Tov and not on Shabbos, whereas Beit Shammai would disagree. So the Gemara actually in Beitza says that our Mishnah might actually be according to Beit Shammai. But in any case, definitely not according to the Bihoda. Because you're saying, Ein Bein Yom Tov Shabbos. There's no difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos. Ela Melechas Eichel Nefesh. That's not Melechas, right. So the Gemara says, my time at the Tanakhama. So why does the Tanakhama say that Machshirim are not allowed on Yom Tov? Because he says, Omakro, who will I Machshirim? The Pasuk says that you're allowed to do on Yom Tov. Hu Levada Yo'osa Lachem. The word who is a mute. Therefore, it means not Machshirim. Rid of Yehuda Amar, what does Rabbi Yehuda say? He says, on the other hand, the Pasuk says, Hu levadi yosa lachem. Lachem means l'chol tzorcheichem. The word lachem, that means that you can do for anything that you need. You need this machshirim. Without it, you're not going to be able to shech. Therefore, you're allowed to. So the question is, v'iduch nami haksiv lachem, knew what is the Tanakhama doing with the word lachem? And the answer is, lachem v'lo la'ovdik kechavim, lachem v'lo la'klavim. Means that on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to prepare food for goyim or for dogs. But not to learn about Lachol Tzorcheichem. The Idach Nami Hoksiv Hu. What about according to Rabbi Yehuda, it says Hu, which we said is a mute. So why doesn't he say that Machshira Eichel Nefesh are excluded? He says, because on the other hand, Ksiv Hu, Ksiv Lachem. Because on the one hand, you have a mute from the word Lahu. On the other hand, you have a rebuy from the word Lachem, that anything that you need for your purposes is mutter. Therefore, we understand, says Rabbi Yehuda, kan machshin she'efshal asosim erev yom tov. One pasuk is talking about, one word in the pasuk is talking about machshirin that you could have done erev yom tov. For example, you could have sharpened this knife erev yom tov. It was already dull erev yom tov, and you could have sharpened it then. Kan machshin she'efshal asosim erev yom tov. On the other hand, you have ones that you couldn't have done erev yom tov. Let's say the knife got nicked on yom tov itself. So therefore, say you may have sharpened it before yom tov, but that doesn't help you now, and therefore you're allowed to resharpen it. The halacha is actually like Rabbi Yehuda. So certain kinds of machshirim that couldn't have been done before Yom Tov are in fact mutar on Yom Tov. Tosfos discusses over here some of the details about when we say that it's allowed, when we say it's not allowed. But the bottom line is, so when our Mishnah had said Ein ben Yom Tov l'Shabbos ela oichol nefesh bovad, that would not be like Rabbi Yehuda, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not only oichol nefesh, it's machshirim oichol nefesh. Now, of course, there are many differences between Shabbos and Yom Tov. For one thing, when it comes to the punishment, a person is Machal Shabbos, he gets Skila, or Kares. A person is Machal Yom Tov, he's only going to be getting Malchus. But we're focusing over here not on Yom Tov and Shabbos as a whole, we're focusing on the Malachas. When it comes to the Malachas that are allowed on Shabbos versus on Yom Tov, we're saying the only difference is Malachas Echol Nefesh, and then we're saying, according to the Yehuda, also Machshire. But obviously there are many other differences between Yom Tov and Shabbos. The same thing in all these other Mishnayos and all these Ein Vein that we're going to have with each one of them, we're referring only to one particular area of difference between them. Obviously, there may be many others. In fact, we had in the previous Mishnah as well, when we said Ein Vein Adarishin La'Adarsheni, we said we're not even talking about the whole month, we're talking about specifically the 14th of Adarishin, and the 14th and 15th of Adarishin versus the 14th and 15th of Adarsheni. So it is with all the other ones. So the Gemara mentions in Beitza that since the Shammai and the Sivil argue about that point, whether Mashivan Peres Derech Aruba, are you allowed to take fruit and throw it down through a skylight on Shabbos, and that the Shammai says you can't and the Sivil says you could, then our Mishnah, which is saying that the only difference as far as Malacha between them is Malacha Sechol Nefesh, that would imply that our Mishnah would have to be like the Shammai. Now, you actually have, our Mishnah is actually repeated in the Masechta of Beitza as well, which is why the Shammai says you can't. Because that's the thing. So, according to the Shammai, the only thing you can do is Malacha Sechol Nefesh. The Sivil is allowing you, Mashulim Derech Aruba is not directly Malacha Sechol Nefesh, because,
wouldn't a malacha be further away from Hetzer than Mukta?
Yeah, but nevertheless, we're still saying that the difference seems to be only as far as malacha, not even as far as Mukta. So therefore, the Gemara says over there that might be according to the Shammai. Let's take a Gemara. We can take a quick look.
I understand the connection.
Yeah.
There's no contradiction between the Mishnah that says that in being Yom Tov Shabbos, Brusus was saying Mashulim Der Haruv Shabbos. So we're saying Obis Shama, Obis Shama. We learn in Mishnah, it's Rudi Rudi. But Shama and in the Tiyam Lech Katan, the way it's a little bit, the Tzor Rosh Hashanah, with the Sivu Mashulim. So we see, therefore, that Obis Shama does not allow the Tzor or Tzulto Shaloi Lech Katan. But the Sivu says it is allowed, even though it's not allowed to take it. So therefore, our Mishnah would have to be like this Shama. And as Mora says, Yom Aloy, maybe not, where the Sivu will allow the Tzulto of the food, would be the Adam Yom Aloy Sivu. But the Mora says, Yom Aloy, maybe not the Sivu. I'm Tama Tama, the Shama also. But Shammai is only saying whether you know you like saw on Yom Tov, but not for the Malachas. I want to talk about it. Maybe they're not talking about transporting something from point A to point B within the same rishos. And the Gemara says not necessarily. Also, until the last part of the Tzari, the whole reason why Tzotzol is not allowed is because of the beginning of the Tzari. So therefore, so the point of this hill, you're allowed to move Kavan and Earth. And whatnot on the logical field. So what it is, when the Chachamim allowed you to do tilto of Kalim and Earthen, but otherwise impossible, you're not going to Shabbos and Simchas Yetzer. So therefore, So Bishamai is going to say, therefore, that Kyoto, that's not direct for the Tzarek HaBiyanto, is also an Anakut, Mashiach HaKeir, Tzarek HaRoba. Where the Tzarek is going to say, not only do you allow that, you allow even the Tzarek of things that are not Oko Nefesh, because we're going to need to bring up just a child or a Tzarek. So based on that tomorrow, it comes out. It might be a little bit more than that. It's not necessarily up to the stuff like that. It's still drying.